Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
Friday edition of Question Mark here on The Fan. RamosLaw.com text line is 303-713-1043. That's 303-713-1043 on social networking as well. We're at 1043 The Fan. You want your question for Mark Schlereth? Well, send it in with that hashtag question mark. Like.
Hey, wait. Before you ask me a question, I want to ask you, because I was talking, you know, about Royce Freeman and about his ability to be a do-it-all guy. And what that does in a matchup standpoint, and how that affects you, or how that affect offensively, how that affects a defense, and how they have to play you straight. And we haven't had that guy. Can he be that guy in your mind? A guy that you can keep in a nickel situation and still have the threat of run? Because I think it's something that nobody talks about. That I think really lends itself to you being good. I think in New Orleans, they do it with their two backs and with Kamara. And I think it was big in Kansas City with Kareem Hunt and his ability to be in those situations, still, you know, pop a run and knock it 60 yards on third down and two, which he did against the Chargers, or, you know, watch him catch the ball out of the backfield and take it 60 yards, which we saw as well. So I just think that's a big aspect of our offense that we just flat haven't had in the last few years.
Right, and you can describe Royce Freeman as a Jonathan Stewart type of back or a more explosive C.J. Anderson. And that's what this team has been looking for. And when I look at Devontae Booker, who's not a fit for the zone blocking system whatsoever, we saw that a couple of years ago. His rookie season was not impressive. He was benched for Justin Forsett. God bless Justin Forsett, but you know, he was at the end of his career. So with Freeman, for me, Stink, it's just pass pro. You know, because as you well know, you can't have that tell when a guy's on the field, like, well, they're not passing here because this guy can't pass block. So as long as he proves that, this is your leader. This is your lead running back. You've made all these changes to be this run first team. Vance Joseph's talked about it from day one. This isn't breaking news or some sort of, you know, amazing, wow, they're going to be run heavy. No, we already know that. We've known that for a long time. It comes down to Royce Freeman in pass protection, because he can be used effectively as that runner or receiver out of the backfield. And as you've identified from film of Royce Freeman, it's not like he's taking a lot of direct shots in that spread Oregon system. He's running free in a lot of space, you know, some glancing blows from a DB who grabs his shoestrings once in a while. So it's not like Freeman, you know, people worried about, and they get the quote wrong all the time, tires only have so much tread, and running back are like tires. Well, with all those carries, Kareem Hunt had almost the same amount of carries, the same amount of touches coming out of Toledo. Nobody really said anything about that. Royce Freeman can be their guy.
I don't think, for me, I love the pick of Royce Freeman. I loved watching him on film. And, you know, it's the difference. You know, it's the difference for me. The Sony Michel versus Nick Chubb. And when you watch Georgia with those two guys, you watch the carries that those two guys got. Nick Chubb got all the dirty work, you know, the 14-15 handoff, the 18-19 handoff, you know, the power, the counter against, you know, with seven man and eight man boxes and heavy fronts and in base personnel. He got the base package runs. Sony Michel got all the nickel zone read, two man side. You know, I mean, there's light box, you expect pass, third right. down and seven, and he pops one for 22 yards. Like he did all the light lifting, and Nick Chubb did all the dirty work. And when you look at Oregon's run game, it's a lot more like what Sony Michel faced than it is what Nick Chubb faced. So even though Royce Freeman had more touches than Nick Chubb did over the course of their college careers, I would say that his touches were a lot less you know, a lot less like car wrecks than that of Nick Chubb. And, right. and so I think there's Royce Freeman's were a lot less like car wrecks than Nick Chubb's. And so I would say that that wear and tear, it's a different form of wear and tear. Even though it's a lot of carries, it's not a lot of heavy boxed carries. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something to highlight for Royce Freeman for those who are afraid of the mileage that's on Freeman. That's highway miles, right?
Right, exactly. We're talking cars. Exactly. It is set your cruise control at 65 and let's go cross country.
A lot of open rushing lanes in Oregon. It is question mark. Use the hashtag question mark. RamosLaw.com text line is 303-713-1043. And Jerry asks, did the Nuggets in Michael Porter Jr. get a steal in a similar fashion to the way the Broncos got a steal with Bradley Chubb? What do you think about the Nuggets getting Michael Porter Jr. with the 14th pick?
Well, it's similar in that both of these guys were exceptionally rated. You know, Bradley Chubb is the best defender in this draft class. And had he come out last year, you know, he goes number one over Myles Garrett. I mean, he's that good a player. He is Myles Garrett athleticism with Julius Peppers' effort. Like, if you ever watch Julius Peppers, especially as a young player, the dude just doesn't stop playing ever. And Julius Peppers was a guy that got a bunch of sacks. You know who else? Who was a big, tall, lanky DN that was drafted, I think, in the first round of Philadelphia all those years ago? He's a really good player, too, and I can picture him in my head, but I can't remember his name. Anyhow, also one of those guys that just was an unrelenting effort guy, a great effort guy. Here you have a guy with skill set, athleticism, strength, and unreal effort. Now, really highly touted player. Michael Porter Jr., exceptionally highly touted player. Obviously, offensive skill set, can knock down shots, best pure shooting big man in the draft. Athleticism, can get to the rack, all those things. Got a back injury. The difference is you got one who is, you know, in Bradley Chubb, who probably fell to where you didn't think he was going to fall, and you jumped all over it, but he's healthy. Porter, you got a lot of hope going on right now. You got a lot of, you know, you're hoping that his back is all right. You're hoping that he gets through that injury. You're hoping that you can get your hands on him. You can get him right. Bradley's right. Chubb is 100% right. Yeah. That dude is ready to play.
So he's got both big man's balls.
Yeah, he does have big man's balls. Because they're both ready. You know, they're both great players. One is ready to roll. One is a question mark.
Well, earlier today on Wingo and Golic, Jay Billis from ESPN, if this doesn't get you excited about Michael Porter Jr., I don't know what, but he talks about why Michael Porter Jr. fell to the Nuggets.
I think most of it was medical. There were some issues going around about you know, how good of a teammate he is, whether some things in his background were of concern on the character side. I don't think it was that big of a deal. I think his talent would have trumped those things if the medical would have been better. But there's always going to be a point in the draft where you're saying, okay, well, it's worth the risk here, because, you know, if we could get a talent of that level, just taking the risk is going to be worth it given what we could get in this slot. But for, you know, the last pick of the lottery, 14, for Denver to get a player that, you know, a year ago he would have been the number one pick in the draft. If he could have come out of high school, he would have been the number one pick. And that's one of the things, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but when people are saying, hey, we need to get rid of the one and done rule, you know, I think folks forget how bad the situation was back in the early 2000s when high school players were coming into the draft. Not only the draft mistakes that were made, but sort of the idea that, you know, we had NBA teams in high schools, that colleges were recruiting guys, wasting their time recruiting guys that were going to go pro. You know, we're about to, if we get rid of this quote unquote one and done rule, we're about to go back to a system that was failing before. We're going to trade one bad system for one that was worse. And all the college coaches seem to forget that they were in favor of the one and done rule when it came in. And now we seem to blame every problem we have on one and done. But Michael Porter's got a chance to be a really good player. But if he's not healthy, I don't know what good it does if you draft him at 14, 10, or 2. If he can't play, if he turns out to be like one of these Greg Oden players that his health keeps him from playing, It doesn't matter where you draft him, but if he's healthy, he's the best big man shooter in this draft. He's got a fantastic stroke, and offensively he can really play.
That's Jay Billis on with Wingo and Golic earlier this morning on Michael Porter Jr., the Nuggets' first-round pick, 14th overall. He shouldn't have even been there. And let's set the health thing to the side as we compare Stink here in question mark, you know, the Bradley Chubb steal to the Michael Porter steal. The teammate stuff could be something, could be nothing. Don't want to make a huge deal out of it. But just hearing that from Jay Billis, who's as connected as they get, you know, it's something that you don't hear that at all with Bradley Chubb. You hear about what a great teammate he is. But it's something to, I guess, monitor with the Nuggets, with Michael Porter Jr. coming in now as the first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, I know this. When you're hurt, you don't feel part of the team. You feel like a pariah. It's a really difficult thing to deal with. One, you were considered, had there not been the one and done rule, to be the number one draft choice coming out. Had you been able to leave high school, you would have probably been the number one player taken. Now you go to Mizzou to do your 1 year. You get hurt. You play three games. You feel like a pariah. You're out. It's done for you. You're not part of the team. And you're a young kid that everybody knows is leaving. I think that's a really hard thing to deal with. You roll out 18 and you don't get to be a part of it, and that's what you went to do. I think that's a difficult thing, and I could see where that could be. Oh, the kid is, you know, the kid's recluse. The kid doesn't have relationships with his teammates, whatever. That'd be hard. It'd be hard to be hurt. I was part of a bunch of teams. When I wasn't playing, I just felt like I didn't belong. So I understand that how hard that is to overcome an injury or to be hurt. And you're already coming in new. You're trying to make friends. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to be a part of it. You can't really be a part of it if you don't get to play. So I would look at some of that stuff and take it with a grain of salt. You know, the whole, well, he wasn't a great teammate. I don't know anybody in that situation that's going to be great. Especially at 18 years old.
Right, and that's where I was going with that, because Bradley Chubb's got a few years on him, and that's where you see, you know, not necessarily a grown-ass man, but you're growing up, and we're 18, we're all morons. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a moron until I was 30, maybe today, according to some people. But, you know, when I was 18, it's the only time I ever mouthed off to my dad. Only once in my entire life did I ever get lippy with my pops. I'm pretty sure you probably didn't get too lippy with Poolside, I would imagine.
No, I didn't get lippy at all with Poolside.
But at 18, we're all morons. I mean, for the most part. We're guys. We're dumb. You know, big dumb animals.
Right. That is correct. You can't even argue that point. I mean, hell, I'm 52 and I'm a big dumb animal. So, like all that stuff. Yeah, I just know the depression. I know the upset. I know, you know, it's hard to handle, and I know how you don't feel a part of it. And so I give him a hall pass on. I give that kid a hall pass on that. If his back is right, I mean, he is silky smooth now. And this is funny. Before the draft yesterday, Mike and I were talking about this. He goes, "What do you want?" I said, "I want a guy that, you know, a three or four that can stretch the field, that can get to, I want an athlete, three or four, big guy." I just feel like that's part of what's lacking. I mean, Jokic, you know, obviously a five, he can play a four, but I mean, the guy is unbelievable, deft at touch, pass, and you know, and a great scorer and all those things.
Right.
But you know, nobody's mistaken him for a great athlete. He's a really good basketball player.
He's got that 2-inch vertical.
Right. But like somebody who's exceptionally athletic on the wing, that can stretch, can open up the inside. That's kind of what I wanted, and they got themselves one, and for the gamble, whatever that gamble is, at 14, I'm like, good for you guys. I think that's for me, that was a gamble worth taking. Like, I applaud the, you know, you weigh it out, and I applaud the pick, because I think you're getting a top three talent at the 14 pick, and if he pans out, great. If he doesn't, hey man, it was worth taking, it was worth a roll of the dice.
Well, you take that chance, and you actually have some excitement. Mm-hmm. You know, because going into the NBA draft, I'm like, oh, well, it's no NFL draft. We all know that. But it's also the 14th pick, the last pick in the lottery. Like, what are you actually going to get? Well, you might have gotten something. You might have gotten something, but how quickly can you develop stink? Because I always think back to, you know, the high schoolers coming in the pros, and yeah, we had some great ones, you know, Kobe, Garnett, of course, LeBron. Mm-hmm. But I remember Jermaine O'Neal, highly touted coming out. He spent like 8 years with the Trailblazers before he went to Indiana, and then he was an all-star. But right. In 8 years, he didn't do anything. So how quickly, because the Nuggets need him now. And right. Forget defense. This kid's not going to play much defense. He's too small. And power players in the post are going to push him around. So I'm worried about the toughness of this team. I'm worried about the defense of this team, which they need sorely. And they're certainly not going to get that toughness from the Joker, much to the chagrin of Nuggets fans. But how quickly can Porter make an impact for the Nuggets? Because they can't wait around for this guy in, you know, 5 years to be something. He needs to be something now.
He does. And you know, I mean, I think he's got such a skill set that, you know, like you said, I mean, Steph Curry couldn't play defense when he came in. And, you know, some would still argue that he can't, but he's gotten a lot better on that end of the court. So I think that's always, that part is the work in progress, but his offensive efficiency, his offensive skill set, his ability, his ability to knock down deep shots and, you know, it's like Kevin Durant, 6'11", you know, 6'11", you can't coach that. You know, you either are or you're not. So just that length in general helps you on that end of the court. So, you know, the defensive stuff, that comes with maturity and growing up and filling into your body and doing all that stuff. But, you know, from what I read and the people I've talked to, the offensive skill set is off the chain. So that to me, I mean, again, worth the gamble, 100% worth the gamble. Good for the Nuggets for getting him.
Yesterday, some guy that you know quite well named Rod Smith stopped by as Pritch and I were on remote at Fitness Gallery, and Rod Smith stopped in, spent 2 hours with us, Stink.
Oh,
it was
nice.
Great. Give me a Rod Smith story.
Because
we've got some cuts about what Rod Smith said, and I'll get to that in a moment. But I want to know a Rod Smith story about how this guy came out. And I asked him about that first catch, that touchdown against Washington. Mm-hmm. Against Daryl Green and, you know, what the coverage was and why he was out there and what he felt before and after that play. But give me a Rod Smith story of playing with this guy back in the day, because spending 2 hours yesterday with him, I was like, man, I want to talk football with this guy nonstop.
Man, Rod, one of the things about Rod, like, Rod was a complete football player, you know, from training in the off season to never missing a workout to all the different things, you know, that he gave from a leadership standpoint. But, you know, one of the things that I always remember about Rod is we beat the Raiders down in Oakland like we, you know, pretty much always did. And I think it was Mike Anderson's year, and Mike Anderson had 100 and, you know, he was like the focal point. You know, he had 150 plus yards or whatever it was. And Rod Smith is, you know, is opposite the formation. So he's wide side of the field, and we run a 19 handoff, you know, to the left side of the field, and Mike Anderson breaks one, you know, and he's down the sideline, he's rolling around, and Grady Jackson was the nose guard, and he's chasing the play as defensive players do, and you know, I mean, he's trotting down, it's got to be 30, 40 yards downfield, and all of a sudden on film, you see Rod Smith from the far end of the field looping around. And he comes and absolutely just blindsides Grady Jackson. I mean, shit, it's the kind of hit that used to be like totally cool and legal that now you get a flag for
it. It would be part of jacked up. Remember that?
Yeah,
back in the day? You got jacked up.
Yeah, so it was the jacked up hit, right? And we get done. Like, so on Mondays, if we won, we went in and watched the film by ourselves. So you had to watch, you didn't have to watch it with your coach, you know, so you didn't have to get yelled at if you made a mistake. It was the grade sheet was there and you just got to watch it. So it was a real big, that was a big thing for us. You know, we, like, you don't want to go in with Alex Gibbs after, even after a win, cause he's going to cuss you out about something, you know, bad step or whatever it was. So anyhow, we get done. So we always show up at the same time, you know, we'd lift together and then we go in and watch the film together, and we come out of the film. And Rod is like in the locker room celebrating. Did you guys see it? Did you see it? Did you see it? Did you see my block? Like, I have never seen Rod get excited about, hey, did you see the seven catches for 140 yards? Like, he couldn't have cared less about that stuff. But that just decleater, Grady Jackson at 335, and just sent him ass over tea kettle, right? I mean, just snot bubbled him. And Rod was just bouncing around the locker room like he just wanted that affirmation from the big guys up front. Like, just a, like, he was totally like a little kid. Like, when your son or daughter does something really good and they want that affirmation, you know, they picked up after themselves and they want the affirmation and they're trotting around going, look what I did, daddy, look what I did. That's Rod bouncing around the locker room because he was so excited about a block he threw. And that was what, like, those are the things that motivated Rod Smith. Like, man, did you guys see that? Are you proud of me? I'm a hog. I'm a junior O lineman type of thing. And I'll just never forget his pure excitement for lighting somebody up. And like, what receiver do you ever see in today's game? One, throwing a block. But two, getting excited about that part of the game, nobody. That was one of the coolest things ever.
I thought you were going to go on a Emmanuel Sanders comparison because Rod didn't care about the 10 catches for 120 yards or whatever. And, you know, maybe Sanders might care about that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I mean, they just wanted to produce. They just wanted to win. That's, you know, Eddie Mack and Rod, they were sold out on winning. That's what was important. And that block, you know, that was part of it. When we, like, the little things that happen, you know, I don't remember. I remember the hit. I remember the block. I remember Rod's excitement. But here's what you don't, like, the block, it wasn't at the point of attack. It didn't spring, you know, it didn't spring Mike Anderson for another 26 yards or it, none of that. You know what it did? It made Grady Jackson for the next half a quarter not rush the passer very well. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, the ancillary benefit of that, he helped me do my job. Like, that guy was wiped out and was worthless for the next, you know, six plays.
Wait a second. So Rod Smith was dispensing justice?
He dispensed justice.
I thought that was your job. Your job only.
No, it was my job. But you know what? Sometimes, you know, leadership happens when you're just doing your thing and people pick up on it. So Rod saw the justice that I dispensed, and he was like, you know what? I want to get in on some of
this. He was inspired.
Exactly.
He was like your little justice deputy.
Yeah, he was. He was like my little Barney Fife.
It's time to dispense some justice.
Come on, Barney Fife.
Let's go get him.
Oh, Huggy Bear, man. Huggy Bear put him out.
By the way, Rod said that Alex Gibbs would yell at them, at the wide receivers, if they missed a block.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Alex, there was nobody. There's nobody that was off limits to, not even John. I've seen Alex Gibbs cuss John Elway out in a 9-on-7 drill in after practice. Like, the next day we would watch practice and we'd have 9-on-7.
What's he yelling at Elway for?
Because he didn't do a good job carrying out the boot fake.
Come on, Wood.
Like, you think you're special? You think, I'm a quarterback. I don't have, just in dog cussing people. Like, Alex Gibbs would cuss out anybody. Yeah, I've seen him come out in the hallway, and I thought it was going to break into fisticuffs, him yelling at Mike Shanahan in the hallway. And I'm talking about F-bombs and everything else. Like, there's nobody he wouldn't cuss out.
Time to throw hands.
Dude, he would cuss out your mother if she was standing there and he was mad.
Hey, nothing like a guy in a windbreaker yelling at you. That's what football's all about. Is
Absolutely.
DT still a top 10 wide receiver? Some interesting comments from Rod Smith that we go over next. Big question for the Broncos this year is, how much does Demaryius Thomas have left in the tank? It's Cecil Lammy sitting in for Mike Evans with the great Mark Schlereth. And yesterday, Rod Smith was on these airwaves, Stink, and listen to what he had to say about what Demaryius Thomas still is and could be in 2018.
He and I talk, you know, especially when I'm over there on a regular, as far about him. We have never really talked football. I just talk strategy, and not necessarily strategy as far as football, just personal strategy. Because if he understands him better, he's way better on the football field, handling the stuff outside of the game. And I expect, like I said, that's why I say his maturity level to me this year is going to be way better, because he's the vet on that team. He's the one with the Super Bowl ring. He's one of the top receivers in the game. You know, he's easily top 10, in my opinion.
Easily top 10, says Rod Smith. Stink, do you agree?
Well, let's go through it. I mean, Julio Jones, I would, you know, I'd put Julio Jones above him. I'd put, I gotta go through teams, right?
It's a Friday list, right?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I love it. Yeah, there's nothing better than efforting music. So, okay. So, Buffalo, no. Miami, no. New England, is there a better receiver on that roster? Like, I love Julian Edelman. He's going to be suspended for the first four games. But, like, he is a slot guy in my mind. And
right.
He's a, like, there's very few receivers from a toughness quotient that I've put ahead of Julian Edelman. Nobody in the league right now, I think. He's a tone setter, but do I think he's a better pure receiver? No. Jets, no. Baltimore, no. Cincinnati, okay. AJ Green, yes. So we got Julio, we got AJ Green. Cleveland, like, Jarvis Landry's a really good player, but he's, like, he's a slot guy, too. He's a gadget guy. In Pittsburgh, Antonio Brown, yes.
Yeah.
That's three. DeAndre Hopkins in Houston, yes.
Okay.
Indianapolis, no. Jacksonville, no. Tennessee, no. Kansas City, no. I don't. You know, I know the one kid can run, but
Tyreek Hill can run, and Sammy Watkins is there. Has a great connection with Pat Mahomes. At least that's what my Chiefs guy tell me. But I'm not putting Sammy above Demaryius.
Right. The Chargers, no.
Yeah, Keenan Allen, 1,300 yards last year.
Yeah, Keenan Allen is. Isn't Keenan Allen odd, though? Like Keenan Allen just compiles yards and catches, but there's nothing to me that I look at and go, wow, how are you going to cover Keenan Allen? But he just always seems to find a way open. But he's there. He's good. Oakland, Amari Cooper had a real down year last year.
Jordy, not the same as he used to be.
No. Dallas. The Giants, Odell Beckham Jr.,
yeah,
if healthy, but he's a pain. Nobody in Philly, nobody in Washington, Chicago, no. Detroit, no. Green Bay. Now, Minnesota, I like both of those guys, Thielen and... But
Thielen and Diggs aren't better than Demaryius.
No. Carolina, no. New Orleans, Michael Thomas is a really good player.
Yeah.
Tampa, no. Mike Evans is good, but he's not all that. Larry Fitzgerald is an all-time great, running in a different role now. He's no longer an X. You know, the Rams, no. Niners, no. Seattle, no. So, yeah, so if you want to rate him in the top 10, I think he's right there at 8, 9, or 10, somewhere in there.
Yeah, you've got seven guys above him on the list, if you include Larry Fitzgerald. And I've got question marks with Keenan Allen and Mike Evans. I would put Keenan Allen and Mike Evans, but that still puts him at 9.
Right. Okay, well, I mean, you can do that. I just, maybe Mike Evans, yeah, I just... Keenan Allen just produces. I know he produces, but every time I watch him, I'm like, how's that guy open? He can't run.
Right.
Right. Like,
his knees tore up.
Right. You know what he's like? He's like a less physical Anquan Boldin. He just produces all the time, and you're like, Anquan Boldin couldn't run away from me. I mean, that dude can't run at all, but he just always found a way to be open, and he was angry all the time. I think that was part of the deal, but, yeah, Keenan Allen puts up numbers, but like I said, I just always look like, how is that dude open all the time?
Well, your deputy, Rod Smith, is right then.
Yeah.
Demaryius still can be a top 10 wide receiver and has to be energized by Case Keenum. Now, if you look at the numbers, Adam Thielen and Demaryius Thomas had almost exactly the same amount of targets, same amount of receptions. The biggest difference, yards after the catch, yards per reception, and, of course, touchdowns.
Right.
Case Keenum's going to help with all the three of those stats.
Right. Well, that this is what I would tell you, and you and I have talked about Case Keenum at length, but one thing that Case does as well, I'm just going to say as well as just about any quarterback in this league. And, you know, he arm strength isn't, you know, he doesn't have great arm strength. He's got good anticipation, but he's not going to wow you with just physical talent. That's not what he does. But when you watch him throw routes and you watch him ball placement, put it to receivers where they can catch it and run it, he's exceptional at that. Like, you know, looping it, you've got a man coverage situation, you've got some type of crossing route, and you got a guy kind of underneath where it's a tight, you know, it's a tight throw, and you got to arc it and put some air underneath it, and you got to drop it before he gets to the kind of second level of defense. Case Keenum puts it on people in full stride on their hands, and he did it consistently last year. That was the most, for me, that was the most impressive things watching him on a consistent basis is his ability to put it on the hands of his receivers in stride.
Yeah, it's pass placement. It's not just the accuracy numbers. Everyone's like 67%. Yeah, that's, you can throw a bunch of 5-yard passes and be a 67% passer, but are you placing it in the right spot? Rod Smith yesterday said that this is Keenum's team and he's ready.
I personally believe he is the guy. I don't think he'll be the issue. He's got the smarts as he's worked with Kube in the past. He proved it last year by coming in, doing what he did, you know, for the team he was with before. And actually it could be better now because this is his team. See, before it wasn't his team. He was the backup. He moved into the starting role from the backup, and now this is his team.
And if things work out with Case Keenum the way they should and could stink, it's going to make me maybe regret what might have been. The Broncos wanted to trade for Case Keenum when he was with the Rams. That didn't go through. We're going to get to see Keenum now, a couple of years behind when they initially wanted him.
Yeah, you know, I've said this ad nauseum. And, you know, nobody wants to hear it. And I'm a big Kirk Cousins fan. I love his ability. I love what he did, in Washington consistently. You know, for whatever reason, they weren't in love with him and they're a dysfunctional organization. So I take that with a grain of salt, but Case Keenum was a guy that, you know, I called one of his games for ESPN Radio back when I was working for ESPN Radio and I've watched him a ton. I mean, I watched, you know, all his stuff with the Rams, and he put up really, like, very decent numbers. They were, you know, they were middle of the row numbers, you know. I mean, they're like, nobody's going to go, oh my gosh, this guy's the next great thing. But he put up decent numbers with just absolute trash football teams. Like, his offense, like, he's getting absolutely murdered. You know, both the best player on their offense was their punter and has been. And, you know, their offensive line couldn't block anybody. And their receivers were just guys. I mean, they draft a gadget guy in the first round, and then they give him redo their contract under Jeff Fisher and give him 40-some million dollars in Tavon Austin. Tavon Austin is not a number one receiver. He's a gadget receiver. And so, their talent level was just bad. And yet he's still putting up, like, 62% completions, you know, and 18 or 20 TDs versus 12 or 13 interceptions. Like, that was who he was. And he's doing this on really bad football teams. Like, I think Case Keenum has the potential to repeat what he did last year. And if he does that, this is a playoff team.
Stay safe with the football. Play efficient, play effective. It's not boring at all. It's the way football's played now. And that's what Case Keenum's going to do in 2018. Have the Rockies begun to figure things out? And how Nolan Arenado is similar to Stink's favorite fashion from the 80s. We unravel that next. Diego Rockies. Keep this thing up. Got the Marlins in town this weekend, but they win 6-4 over the Mets. Arenado homers, drives in five, as those Rockies beat the Mets 6-4. Stink, are the Rockies starting to figure it out with this three-game win streak?
Well, they're starting to hit the ball well. And you know what? I mean, as shaky as we all still feel about the bullpen, and rightfully so, you should feel shaky about the bullpen. They've been okay the last couple of games. I mean, they haven't been stellar by any stretch of the imagination the last couple of games, but they've been okay. Gave up a couple runs in the eighth and the ninth yesterday, but it hasn't been like a dumpster fire. Freeland has been magnificent. He's certainly been their ace so far. Again yesterday, going six innings, giving up only two runs on five hits. Even though he was a little shaky with four base on balls, we'll give that to him. He's all right. You need that kind of length. You need some distance. You need some innings out of John Gray, and you need him to be legit. So anyhow, that's kind of where I am with them. They're figuring out of the dish right now. If they can solidify that bullpen a little bit, they've got to have better starts from Gray. I worry about them slipping behind. They're behind the Giants. They're behind the Dodgers, and they're behind Arizona right now. And I worry about them, that gap widening. Like if Gray doesn't pitch well today, you know, that gap's going to widen. And right. That scares me. That part scares me a bit, but at least, the ship is no longer listing. You know, they've got it up right now. So we'll see how they roll out here until the All-Star break.
How would you describe this season to this point then with the Colorado Rockies because of that opportunity in the NL West? We knew it was going to be weaker this year. We knew after the excitement that the Rockies built last season that there would be an opportunity. And to this point, Stink, to me at least, it just seems like an opportunity missed, or maybe not grasped as much as it should have been.
Right. Well, it's been, they've never played complementary. We talk about complementary football all the time, offense, defense, field position, special teams, all that stuff. They have never played complementary baseball. It's always been, hey, the starting pitching's going great. We're not getting anything out of our lineup. Our lineup's going great. Our bullpen is a disaster. Our bullpen's a disaster, you know, and our starting pitching's a disaster, and now we're hitting the ball. So they've never kind of been able to put it all together. Now, if they put what they've been doing at the plate recently, what they've been doing at the dish recently with good starting pitching and, you know, and being able to get it to Ottavino and being able to get it to Wade Davis with the lead, like if they could put a couple of weeks of that together and put, you know, a 8-2 stretch together, then you're talking about a team that's going to gain some ground and close that. I think it's about a 4.5-game gap behind Arizona right now. And then all of a sudden you're talking like this could be good. But let's face it. The Dodgers are down. They've had injuries. Their third baseman was injured. Kershaw's been injured. Like I said, their third baseman Scott Turner's been injured, and he didn't take advantage of that. The Giants have had injuries. Bumgarner missed the majority of the first couple of months of the season. You know, he's been injured. He's back now. You really didn't take advantage of that. And Arizona went through several key injuries, not only pitching but at the plate as well, with a couple of their key players. And Goldie, you know, MVP, kind of candidate MVP player, Goldie was really scuffling early, and he didn't take advantage of that. So, yeah, lost opportunities. I think everybody would kind of feel the same as you, or at least explain it that way. There's been some real lost opportunities.
Yeah, and John Gray, figure it out. Just figure this thing out.
For the love of Pete, figure it out.
Right. Now, I had a question for you, Stink, because I was actually writing about Hayden Hurst a couple of days ago. He's the Ravens' first-round pick this year, a tight end out of South Carolina. He was a pitcher with the Pirates. He was in their minor league system. That's why he's a little bit older as a rookie in the NFL. But I was looking over notes that scouts had shared with me, and they said he developed the yips when he was minor league pitching for the Pirates. What in the hell are the yips? How do you describe a pitcher developing the yips?
Well, you just can't. You have no feel. You have no. It's like standing over a chip shot in golf and like, oh gosh, here we go, here we go. And you can't throw, you know, you can't chip it up. You can't throw a strike. Yeah, so that's the yips in baseball is real, unfortunately. And yeah, he developed them. Who was the St. Louis Cardinal, Ankiel, right? He started off as a pitcher and was really a promising pitcher and developed the yips and like literally couldn't throw strikes, went down to the minors, couldn't throw a strike, like to the point where he gave it up. And then he came back, Rick Ankiel, and made it back as a center fielder because he was such an exceptional athlete. But this guy went from pitching in the big leagues and being like he's going to be a superstar pitcher in the big leagues for a long time, and like completely developed the yips and like literally could not throw a strike. Like you watch the film of him throwing like once he got the yips, and it's like frightening how bad it was. And then he made it all the way back to the big leagues and had a good career as a center fielder.
We're going to have a little bit of an extended question mark here because we had a great one. You're telling sharing a story about Rod Smith, your deputy in dispensing justice. So I wasn't able to ask this, but Blake had chimed in on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. One of the 8 o'clock texters that is not mean, but he mentioned Stink, or he asked, Mark, what was your favorite fashion, from the 80s? Was it the leg warmers? Was it the headbands? Was it the Zubaz pants? Our man Blake wants to know.
Yeah, I was a big Zubaz guy. That
was your go-to?
Yeah, that and fanny pack. Yeah, and you wear the fanny pack, you wear it on the front. And then you have all your stuff in there. Tight t-shirt, Zubaz, and a fanny pack.
You had the bro tank, though, right? Get a bro tank on.
Yeah. And
or a half shirt. You were a half shirt guy?
Yeah, and a mullet. No, not with my belly. You cannot be a half shirt guy with my belly. But, and then the mullet, you know, the hair hanging out the back of the hat. Very sexy.
Sounds like you need to bring it back.
Yeah.
Bring it back. Zubaz fanny pack.
Yeah. Probably not.
No! God, please, no!
Fanny pack was like, why did that fall out of favor? Because the fanny pack was really
I don't know. It's like everyone started making fun of it. And then it's like, well, wait a second. No, it's a utility piece, right?
Right. Yeah, you could have your phone in there. You could have everything in. You could have whatever you want. Your keys, your wallet, your phone, chapstick. You could put, like, the kids' stuff. Like, Daddy, could you hold this for me? Sure, I'll put it in my fanny pack.
I got my fanny pack. Why wasn't it on the fanny, though? It was always they didn't call it a crotchy pack, you know?
Yeah, you had to put it in the front. But why did all of a sudden become it was cool for a while, and then it became totally uncool, and then everybody just made fun of you and shamed you into never wearing it.
Well, here's the thing. My man Joe Rogan still rocks a fanny pack. I think he sells fanny packs on his website.
Really?
And if Joe Rogan, Mr. UFC, I mean, like, who's a manlier man than Joe Rogan? I mean, other than you know, present company, of course.
Uh-huh. Mark Schlereth. Right. Handsome son bitch, get out here.
Exactly. But if Joe Rogan can rock a fanny pack, I think, Stink, you need to join the movement.
You think I should just put a fanny pack on and haters, you know, haters going to hate, so I'm just going to let them go.
Exactly. Like, it's too good.
Yeah, I like your theory there.
So you weren't a leg warmer? You weren't what about the pastel suits from the 80s? Like the Don Johnson Miami Vice stuff? You never rock that?
No.
I love that song.
Yeah, I was.
Let that one breathe.
Yeah. I was too fat back then to really pull off the pastel colors and stuff.
Are we looking like an Easter egg out there?
Yeah, that's no.
No?
Yeah.
Did you ever go the boat shoes and no socks?
No, I wasn't a boat. I didn't like that either. I didn't like that feel. Your feet get sweaty. I don't like that.
You don't like to be sweaty?
No, I don't like that. I don't like your feet getting sweaty, you know, when you're as heavy
as I was.
You would
pee your pants on the field and you didn't like your feet getting sweaty?
Yes.
Come on, bro.
Yeah. If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like the sweaty feet.
Bring back the fanny pack. Do it for me, brother.
All right, I'll get one.
No! God, please, no!
I'll wear it on Monday.
Get one with the Joe Rogan logo. And
there you go.
We've got the NFL Network, their top 100 list. They've released their top 10. And there are 10 finalists. The ranking is not out yet, but where is Von Miller going to be in the NFL Network's top 100, top 10? Mark Schlereth clears the air about that next.